This public radio podcast is supported by the Society for Human Resource Management, meeting the challenges of a changing world, online at shrm.org, and by KeyBank Capital Markets, specializing in corporate and investment banking solutions for established and growing mid-sized companies. Visit key.com/KBCM.
I am a broken record.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. I know I've said this four times already this week, but the price of oil hit another record high this morning, $125 a barrel. The main force here seems to be investors hedging against inflation. What I mean is, if you're an oil trader and you think the price is headed for $150 or $200, it makes sense to buy it at $125. Plus, the dollar lost value again today, so oil is cheaper for overseas investors. Next week, we'll find out exactly how much prices are going up for everything. The government releases its Consumer Price Index. To your ears, it's probably going to seem way too low. Nancy Marshall Genzer takes a look.
You just paid, what, about $60 to fill up your gas tank? You're shell-shocked by egg prices. They've risen at least 35%. So why do economists expect the overall consumer price index for April to inch up by less than 1%? Global Insight economist Ken Boschman says the government uses a market basket of goods to come up with a CPI.
There's so many other things in there that aren't that volatile, and they're not increasing that rapidly.
The price of women's clothing is actually down, for example. So is the cost of furniture. But we tend to pay more attention to the prices of things we buy a lot. Adding to the confusion, government inflation hawks give more weight to the so-called core rate of inflation. That excludes the prices of energy and food.
You're telling me that I'm fine if I don't eat or drive to work?
Wachovia senior economist Mark Vittner says that's a typical reaction from consumers, but he says the government needs to look at pricing trends for all goods. Otherwise, volatile food and energy prices will have too much influence. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall Genzer for Marketplace.
Don't forget, you also have to fill up the airplane, you and your fellow passengers. The airlines have increased their fares again. American, Delta, and United just sent their tickets up $20 to keep up with the cost of fuel. Fuel surcharges now total $130 on some flights. The overseas stock markets are down this morning. In Asia, shares finished about 2% lower. European stocks are down more than 1% so far. Wall Street had minor gains yesterday. The Dow added 52 points to 12,866. The NASDAQ was up 12, and the S&P 500 climbed 5 points. When it comes to real estate, remember, it's a buyer's market, so General Motors figured now would be a good time to buy its headquarters in downtown Detroit. It's paying $626 million. Pretty good bargain. GM's been leasing the building since 1996. GM also paid $200 million for a couple of properties in nearby Pontiac, Michigan. You're listening to the Morning Report for Friday, May 9th on Marketplace.org. The radio company Clear Channel said this morning profits were way up in the first quarter, 70% compared to the first quarter of last year. But Clear Channel's in the middle of a messy sale. Two private equity firms are trying to buy the company, but the banks that were supposed to finance the deal now want to back out. Dan Gretsch has more.
Clear Channel first announced it would be taken private in a leveraged buyout back in November 2006. The deal was approved after a 10-month struggle over price with activist shareholders. Then the credit market tanked. Now the six banks that agreed to finance the deal, including Citigroup, Morgan Stanley, and Wachovia, want to pull out. Media analyst Joe Bonner is with Argus Research.
The shareholders took management to the wall on price. And then, in the meantime, credit markets fell apart and the deal might just fall apart.
Clear Channel and the private equity firms that want to buy it have sued the banks to force the deal through. They'll meet in court next week. In the meantime, Clear Channel's 1,100 radio stations are losing ad revenue to new online competitors. The deadline to complete the deal is June 12th. I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
One of Britain's leading energy companies, Centrica, is warning that wind power is becoming unprofitable in the UK. From London, Stephen Beard reports.
Centrica says the economics of offshore wind farms are now marginal. The cost of construction's doubled in the past 2 years. The soaring price of steel and copper are mainly to blame. This is the second attack on the viability of wind power here in recent days. Last week, the Shell oil company delivered a devastating blow. It pulled out of a project to build the world's largest offshore wind farm off the south coast of England. But Gordon Edge of the British Wind Energy Association says this industry will not be blown off course.
We have to understand this is a very new industry. It's at an early stage, and I'm very hopeful that we're going to see this sector become a major part of our means to tackle climate change here in Europe.
But Shell said last week it was going to focus on onshore wind power in the United States, where tax breaks would make the business more profitable. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
In Haiti, riots over food prices.
Limiting purchases of rice.
Hey, winter wheat's up 25 cents. Corn.
We continue now our coverage of the global food situation. Today we look at one way people are coping with higher food prices. They're growing their own food. Stacey Vanek Smith has more.
The Stanford Avalon Community Garden spans several blocks of the Watts neighborhood in Los Angeles. It has a long waiting list for its 87 plots. And with food costs rising, Executive Director Miguel Luna expects the garden will get even more popular.
With prices going up and the grocers, this is ideal. You see what you're growing, you're able to grow it, and you take it home.
Lupe, who works as a nanny, finally got her plot 3 months ago. Her mint, cactus, basil, and greens are flourishing.
Of course, I save a lot of money. I wish to grow beans and rice.
And lots of us wish we could grow Chinese takeout, or at least make gardening that convenient. Products that make growing food easier, from plants to tools to fertilizers, are boosting garden store sales.
They want convenience. No one wants to spend hours and hours and hours outside.
Josh Peoples is director of marketing for Scott's Miracle-Gro. He says new gardeners have been snapping up products that save time, including soil that has fertilizer and food already in it, and single packs of plant food.
There's no getting your fingers dirty or having to know how much to measure. You just rip open the top, pour it into a watering can, and you're ready to go.
Peoples says container gardening is also flourishing. That's growing plants in tubs and pots, popular with urbanites and weekend weed whackers. A Miracle-Gro soil that resists overwatering, a big problem with container gardening, has seen sales jump 40% a year. Of course, it all starts with the seeds. Sales of those are up 25% at gardening stores across the country.
We're seeing a strong interest in garden seed this year, probably more so than in years past.
Patty Price is Senior VP of Merchandising for Lowe's Outdoor Living Products. She says growers are looking beyond the typical choices.
We're seeing the typical tomatoes and peppers growing, but we're also seeing things like blueberries and raspberry and blackberries that are growing.
Gardening centers are expected to be a bright spot for companies like Lowe's and Home Depot. Both have been hit hard by the housing downturn. I'm Stacey Vanek Smith for Marketplace.
Companies that make food have a choice to make. Cut back on high-priced ingredients or raise prices. Seems many big companies are choosing to cut corners. Campbell's Soup, for example, is putting fewer vegetables in its vegetable soup. For smaller businesses, this situation is even trickier. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Sam Eaton reports.
After years running his family's Los Angeles tamale shop and restaurant, Raul Ramos dreamed of bigger things. He wanted to take his mother's famous La Indiana tamale recipe to the masses. Today, that dream has become a reality. Ramos's company churns out about 7,000 handmade tamales a day. But the global food crisis now threatens even this small operation on the outskirts of L.A. The world's rising demand for food and energy have raised the price of every ingredient he uses, from pork to cooking oil.
They have never gone up this high that I can remember in the past 20 years that I've been working this industry.
Ramos's main ingredient, white corn, has tripled in price over the last year and a half. That's forced him to lay off a third of his staff.
The customer is only willing to pay so much for the product, and I can't increase my price based on what my ingredients cost.
Morningstar analyst Gregory Warren says price is the last thing food companies want to touch since competition in the industry is so fierce. That means the savings have to come from somewhere else. And for many companies, Warren says that somewhere else is in the quality and quantity of the ingredients they use.
You know, let's say I have a, sugared beverage. And if I can use a flavor enhancer and use half the sugar I'm using now, that cuts out half that cost. So it's helping to kind of maintain your margins or at least keep them from going down too far.
Kraft Miracle Whip has more water in it. Nestle snack products have less milk. Even Sara Lee has switched to cheaper wheat for some of its breads. Harry Balzer of the consumer research firm NPD Group says reducing the quality of the product may offset costs in the short term, but it could also inflict lasting damage to the brand.
Consumers will not forget this. Make no mistake about that. It will have a longer lasting effect than just this economic downturn.
La Indiana's Raul Ramos is banking on those discriminating consumers to keep him afloat. That's why he's refused to use cheaper ingredients in his tamales. He even grinds his own red chilies. And so far, he's resisted mechanizing because handmade tamales taste better. But Ramos says if food prices keep rising, small companies like his, the ones that have maintained their quality standards, won't be among the survivors.
If I don't know when it's going to end, I can't predict how far I can stay alive.
In Los Angeles, I'm Sam Eaton for Marketplace.
For more coverage on food, visit our website, marketplace.org. All week, the sports world has been buzzing about the Kentucky Derby, and not in a good way. The death of eight bells after the race has prompted protests from animal rights groups. It has people within the industry searching for answers. They know casual fans might stop watching if horses keep dying at the track. Our Business of Sports commentator Diana Nyad is here. Diana, a lot of issues have come up regarding track surfaces, the age of racehorses, medication. What do you think it boils down to?
You know, what it really comes down to, I don't care what subject we discuss, it comes down to the inbreeding. That's what's caused the horse to be so fragile. Every single horse, 20 of them, this past weekend at the Kentucky Derby, came down the exact same bloodlines. You know, you can trace back to the very same bloodlines, only a grandfather away. So, you know, we know what's happened with humans in this case. We know what happens with canines, with dogs in this case. You develop genetic weaknesses. Mm-hmm. And now the horse has the ankle bones and the lower legs are incredibly susceptible to injury. And so, to my mind, the one thing that could be done is a central agency that really overlooks. We could say that you've got to go, unless a horse goes through six generations staying away from that bloodline, you know, then maybe they can go to the grand-grand-grand-grand-granddaughter of mm-hmm. War Emblem. But not the direct descendants can't be inbred.
Do you think the industry is in such danger here that they need to take this upon themselves to do something? Or do you see Congress getting involved, something like what happened with baseball?
You know, I don't. I think that it would be different if we saw a lot of callous people in the racing world who came out, you know, after Saturday's tragedy and said, hey, it's just part of the sport. You know, don't bother us about it. That's not how they feel. They are devastated. It hurts them deeply. And I think that the racing association, regardless of how much money they want to make, they are definitely looking into every nook and cranny to see what can make these horses safer, including changing breeding rules.
All right, Diana Nyad, our Business of Sports commentator. Thank you.
Scott, it's a pleasure.
In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.